Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
That's right, everyone. We all feel good. Welcome to the TortureCast. It is now Thursday, April 15th, the former tax day. And, oh, there goes my computer still going on. I am your host, Chad King, and joining me today is Eric Nathanson. And I just wanted to throw that in there, the old I Feel Good commercial from the 1989 season that the Giants put out for the promo. I was like 15 years old that season, and I just had a lot of fun just kind of reminiscing during those times. You could see Will Clark and Brett Butler, Robbie Thompson, Kevin Mitchell, the whole gang in that commercial. How you doing, Eric, by the way?
Hey, Chad. I feel good, too. This is a great start to the season. I love the callback because it's kind of the they seem like they're having fun as a ball club. And that commercial, everybody was having a ball. I love the little stunt they pulled at second base where they like leaned over and grabbed each other's ankle for some reason.
I don't know what that was about.
So that was pretty good. I feel good too, though. Giants are 8-4. Like if the playoffs started today, they'd be in. So why can't you feel good?
I mean, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, we both had our predictions in the season preview, and you know, most of the listeners and other Giants fans we've talked to think that, yeah, they could reach 500. There's some, I think, I still think overzealous Giants fans that think they can win, you know, up to 90 games. Yeah, they're on the trajectory for that. I will give you that. But they're 8-4, like you said, after the first 12 games. I mean, this is insane. But Eric, I got to be honest with you. If you didn't know the score or the record, and I came back in a time machine to right before opening day, and I told you and my former self, you know, guys, after 12 games, the Giants are hitting a second worst 207. What's their record?
4-8, maybe.
Yeah, I'd be like 4-8 at the best, right? I mean, 207 is just atrocious, and this team is much more capable of hitting better than that. But yeah, 8-4, and I mean, we talked a little bit about it pre-show, but I think we have to chalk it up to number one is pitching. I mean, clearly, right? Second best pitching now, along with the second worst hitting. So you'd think they'd even out to a 6-6 record, but they're 8-4. So their ERA is at 2.78. Their starters have been off the charts. I mean, all 12 games, a starter has gone at least 5 innings. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
That is crazy. And up until Gausman's start, all of those starts that had gone a minimum of 5 innings, the starter had also given up 3 earned runs or fewer. Gausman obviously gave up 4 runs in that first inning, but he still went the full 5 or 6 that game and gave up 5 runs. But he still kept the Giants in it, and they ended up, of course, winning that game. The bullpen, you know, melted down that first game of the season. And since then, it's been solid, man. I mean, what else can you say? They've been holding the line and closing out games. I mean, you look at the list of wins, and we'll get into the meat, you know, pretty much right here. We're going to review the last 3 series because we last recorded 10 days ago, right before they went down to San Diego. So we had only seen them against the Mariners when they were 1-2. But they won 2 of 3 from the Padres in San Diego. They swept Colorado, and they won 2 out of 3 from Cincinnati. But here are the scores. 3-2, 3-1, 3-2 in 10, 3-1, 4-3, 4-0, 3-0, 7-6, 3-0. these are all really close games. None of these have been blowouts, either from wins or from a loss perspective. And I think for me, the pitching has been way better than we would have thought. The hitting has been worse than we thought, but the timeliness of those hits has been incredible. Not just, you know, your moniker two out hits, but when they're hitting them, you know, and we'll get into the highlights, but you have Crawford with big doubles and home runs and Solano and Flores with sacrifice flies. And that gives them the one run lead, but then the bullpen's coming in and shutting it down. So it's been kind of a myriad of these things. And I'm not here to spell doom and gloom. I'm super happy they're 8-4, but unless they really continue this streak of pitching and their hitting catches up with the pitching staff, this might be a little bit of a house of cards. Not that it's going to come crashing down and they're going to be horrible, but I think, like you said, they're playing above their weight right now.
They are, only because they aren't hitting as much, and that's above their weight. They should be hitting like a ball club that's 8-4. Like, that's what we expected of them as an offense. We didn't expect this 2-0-something garbage and almost hitting as bad as the Cubs. Thank goodness nobody is as bad as the Cubs. they're so bad. I can't even watch the games anymore. But the timely hitting, I don't know about you, but I haven't stressed about the Giants games as much as maybe years past, because the bullpen has been so locked down and because it feels like the timely hitting is just going to happen. And I think that is a result of the bullpen locking it down. Them just coming in. Tyler Rogers is making a believer out of me. I mean, what can I say? They're going to use him every day.
He still makes me nervous. I know, I know.
Me too. But I mean, if they're going to use him and he's going to be effective, how can I complain? Those rising sliders he was throwing on Tuesday night against the Reds were just, you know, something to see. And I think the fact that the bullpen's been able to keep it down, the Giants offense is coming around. Because they're so good, somebody is bound to get that hit against the inferior bullpen of the other club, a la the Cincinnati Reds or Colorado Rockies. I mean, especially the Rockies.
Yeah, yeah, they're not doing so well right now.
No, and that's really what's contributed to them winning, is staying in the game with their pitching every time and giving the offense the absolute opportunity to get back in it. You know, they work counts. They work the starting pitchers really well so far this year. I feel like once they're getting to their second time through the order, they're already like at 50 pitches a lot of the times. They're really working counts and going deep against guys. And the philosophy of only swing at strikes in the zone that you can hit seems to be paying off so far for the hitting. I know there was some, I forgot there was a stat where they were leading in barrel percentage or something like that for the first, through the first 10 games of the season. And again, that's a result of the hitting coach. So it's stunning to see where they're at, 8-4. Because they should conceivably be 6-6, 5-7 right now. So when their offense comes around, imagine how good they really could be. Because when you get this good at pitching, when you add that kind of hitting, I mean, you're not going to catch the Dodgers, but the Padres are faltering now. It's not inconceivable that the Giants could, you know, shoot for second place in the division at this point.
Yeah, you know, I think a good barometer for a team season is definitely the quarter mark, you know, 40 games or so. And, you know, we're a while from there. And, you know, even in the bad Giant seasons, they'll win 8 out of 12. Most teams will win 8 out of 12 at some point in the season, even some of the worst teams. So I think, you know, we just got to, you know, pump the brakes a little bit in terms of like, yeah, that's it, they're going for the playoffs. But you know, like you said, and you brought up, and we have some comments too about the Giants offense. Absolutely, it's below where they should be. So the expectation is they'll be better, closer to their mean. So the hitting should improve. Likewise, I don't expect them to continue being the second best pitching staff in the National League either. So I think those two are like this, and they're going to come and meet in the middle at some point, which, you know, maybe that cancels each other out. But again, it's not impossible, you know, from my perspective, to see the Giants, you know, still winning. You know, like I said, my prediction was like 78 wins. Well, when you have an 8-4 start, that probably bumps up the prediction a few games to maybe 500 for me. Who knows? I mean, it could be one of those crazy seasons where they just come out of nowhere, you know, like the 93 season where you're like, what, 103 wins? Where did that come from? You know, not saying 103 for this team, but I mean, like, you know, like 85 or 87 or something like that. That would be pretty incredible. And I think that would be overachieving for this team. But that's great news. It's just been great news all around, especially after the first game. And man, if they had won that, they would be what, 9-3 right now. They'd be keeping pace with the Red Sox and Dodgers right now. Speaking of which, the Giants are, of course, 8-4 total, 5-1 at home, which is fantastic. And they have the second best record in the National League behind the Dodgers, who are 10-2. Go figure. And then the Red Sox as well, although they're currently losing right now, they are 9-3. What's funny about them is they lost their first three games of the year, and now they've won 9 in a row. So it's a very awkward way of unconventional way of getting the 9-3, but they've done it. But yeah, pitching and timely hitting. I think that's the thing, right? So what we're going to do now is we're going to kind of go into each series. We're not going to break down every game by game because we have 9 of them and that's too many to review. But we'll talk about kind of series as whole. But they went down into San Diego after Seattle. And they won 2 out of 3. The first game they won 3-2. And here we go. The whole theme of this series is going to be timely hitting. And right now I will bring up, see if my Chrome will cooperate with me. Here we go. We have Yaz with the go-ahead pinch hit home run in the 7th inning.
Yastrzemski lifts one high into center field and deep and out of here. And the Giants take the lead. Yastrzemski with his first of the year. And it looked like he was out front just a little bit.
I'm really surprised by that. I thought it was going to be a routiner for that very reason. I didn't think he got all of his lower body in it. He was out just a little bit front. When you hit a ball and you don't get complete strength in your legs and your swing to center field, you're not thinking you have a chance to go.
He clipped it.
He clipped it perfectly right there on the bottom part of the ball. Backspin and backspin. Just rolled this thing right out of here.
That was a... He was reaching for that. It was a very odd home run.
I got to give Mike Yastrzemski credit. So we're talking about the Padres series. The Giants took 2 out of 3. That was in game 3 in a 2-2 mm-hmm. ball game that he came in and pinch hit and hit a solo shot to make a 3-2 Giants, which they went on to win the game by that score. That's pretty clutch. For a guy who hasn't done much to start the season, he's really been off. He hasn't found a swing. He's striking out a ton. For a guy like that to come in and he basically contributed to a win, which was a swing victory in a series, that's pretty impressive when you look at it, especially when he didn't put his best swing on the ball. You could tell Kipe didn't know if it was going to get out or not, and then totally went bananas after it landed.
Yeah, it's... exact right time. So I don't know what else to say about it. Again, I think that Yaz is not going to be hitting under 200 for the year. Crawford's not going to be hitting under 200 for the year. They're gonna contribute in normal ways, not just with the big hits. But the Giants went on to win that game, of course, with Yaz's go-ahead. And it was a pinch hit home run. They lost the second game. They came back and they won the final game. Let me get my notes up here. Solano, again, another big hit. Sac fly in the 10th. Granted, they start with the extra runner on second base, moved him over to third, and got him home with the sac fly. The funny thing is that, you know, they said something like 58% of the home team wins no matter what happens in terms of the extra runner on in the 10th inning.
Oh, wow.
But if the visitor doesn't score in the top of the 10th inning or the top of any of the innings if they're tied, the home team wins 82% of the time. Can you believe that?
Because it's a bunt and a sack fly.
That's exactly it. You have the advantage of knowledge. You know what the visitor's done. They've done nothing. They didn't score the run. So you just play for one. That's all you need to do. So you bunt them, and boom, you can knock them in, you know, with 2 at-bats. You sack fly, an error, a hit, whatever you need. Pass ball, wild pitch. So it's really crucial for that visiting team to get that run across in the 10th inning, because if they don't, it just 4 out of 5 times the home team's going to win. And that's what I think is one of the weaknesses for this new rule, which I know should only be lasting this year when COVID's under control. Presumably, we're going to go back to the old rules. They're trying to make sure that, you know, they're not playing 18 inning games. But I think this is one of the imbalances of it. I know someone would say, well, they play 81 home games and 81 road games, so it balances out just by that nature. But I don't – I just don't see too many fans of it. I mean, have you changed your tune? Do you like it at all? Do you like that it can shorten games right now? Or do you prefer it to go back?
I want just regular baseball. Yeah. Until somebody wins. I mean, don't give anybody an advantage for any stupid particular reason.
So anyway, to me, I was surprised. They went down to San Diego and they took 2 out of 3. And yeah. That was great. I mean, it was like, boom, right away. Because that was a real test, right? The Padres are good. And their record is very good right now, despite losing 2 out of 3 to San Francisco. So,
well, it goes back to, like, you know, you saying after 12 games, had I told you this? After 6 games, had I told you the Giants were 3-3 at that point, you would think, okay, that makes sense. They took 2 of 3 in Seattle and lost 2 of 3 to San Diego. For them to go to San Diego after starting the season like that, there seems to be some – some mental fortitude in this team already. They seem that's where the clutchness comes in with the guys like, yeah. So it was good to see that Padres series. And I think it really did propel them home. I mean, granted, they started facing a bad Rockies team, but I really feel like it propelled them for that home. And the home opener was a ball. Johnny Cueto was amazing.
Johnny Cueto was absolutely fantastic. Doing a triple shimmy that one time. I should have clipped that audio or video highlight. But here we are in the bottom of the 7th of Game 1, their home opener. Cueto is shutting down the Rockies, but the Giants aren't able to push a run across the plate until one out with a 1-2 count for Brandon Crawford with the bases juiced.
High drive, right center field, off the bottom of the wall, and they're running all over the place. Dickerson holds up at third, and the Giants lead 2-0.
Boy, if we missed that.
Oh. And they're running all over the
comes
plate.
Right back out over the middle of the plate with a fastball, no cut. And Crawford jumps out of it. He knows what's coming.
Yes, he did.
One hops the wall, and it's off to the races.
Look at those locks. Look at those beautiful locks. My God. No, it's... again, Brandon Crawford coming through with the clutch double there, and they ended up winning the game 3-1. So Johnny Cueto, so far, we'll get to him a little bit later for his next start. He has been pitching like his pants are on fire. I mean, I think that's why he shimmies a couple extra times, but he has just been pitching out of his gourd. It's been great. He's 34 years old. He's pitching like he's 24.
Yeah, I have to ask, though, I was concerned about his pitch count. I was totally good with Kapler going out there and talking to him and then keeping him in after the triple. And I was totally good with Kapler also going out there and getting him when he did with two outs in the ninth. It was totally fine. But, I mean, do you think they pushed him too far? I mean, it's a possibility. I guess this is more of a discussion for when we get to his injury. But,
yeah,
I mean, did they push him too far? Because he did look extremely good. I mean, he was in control. It was the opposite of the Cueto we saw for a few innings in his first start of the season.
And yeah, I think 104 pitches his first start, 118 this last start we're talking about against the Rockies. I was listening to the game. I wasn't watching because I was on the road. But when he started the ninth, I was shocked because he was over 100 pitches already. I was like, well, really? Wow, okay, here we go, Gabe Kapler. This is not the typical Kapler move. And he let him go, and then he came back out after, was one out, or is it after the runner got on? I can't remember. He came out with Buster Posey, and it looked like in the highlights he was talking a lot to Posey, too. It was like, hey, does he still have it? And Posey's like, yeah, he's fine. And he left him in. That was fantastic, you know? The crowd gave him a standing ovation.
Yeah, they went from booing to cheering.
It was great.
I gotta say, I saw fans who were complaining about the booing of Kapler there, but you're not booing Kapler per se. You're booing the decision that needs to be made in that moment. If everybody's like, well, Bochy out there wouldn't have been any booing. I call BS. People would have been booing thinking that Johnny's going to get pulled before they keep him in the game. And so I definitely think fans, you know, are in tune with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, he ended up getting that, you know, runner on, and then the next lefty was up, and he had 8 2/3. So at that point, it was fine. I mean, get him out of there. That was great. You know, McGee came in and shut the door. But, Johnny Cueto has just been a revelation. And again, we'll get back to him for his next start. In the meantime, we move to game 2. And guess who's up again, Mr. Eric? We got Crawford with his long flowing locks again. Now they're down 3-1 with one out and a full count in the bottom of the sixth. Two runners on. Here's what Crawford did.
Deep right field.
Yes, John?
It sounds like 40,000 are back in town at Oracle Park. Brandon Crawford.
He again swung like he knew it was coming.
Yeah, and that was an inch or two below the zone.
Yep.
So he just went down and got it. Just golfed it out of here. Seven iron, you know?
Crawford honestly is having an amazing start to the season with these kind of moments and coming through in clutch spots because he knows there's question marks around him. He knows he's entering a season where a lot of eyes are on him. So it's impressive to see him step up both at the plate and in the field so far. I mean, what a time. We're like, okay, Giants are coming back to earth. The Rockies are going to beat them. This is, you know, what happens. And then, bam, Crawford's like, nah, forget about it. We're still better than them.
He's like, yeah, we're good. We're good. But, yeah, they went on to win that game again. Timely hitting. What I mean, this team hitting 207. I mean, it shows. There's no doubt about it. They put a couple runners on or maybe no runners on. They're striking out kind of a decent amount. There's a lot of, you know, weaknesses right now. But I don't know if it's just good luck or some of these batters are bearing down in crucial situations. It's hard to say. But whatever they're doing, it's working.
Maybe it's fans in the stands, and that's why guys are coming through in the clutch. Who knows? I mean, there could be a big difference this year. Some guys are performers. That's where Cueto on opening day really played to the crowd, and he's a performer. And I guess that could help explain why last year was a bit of a struggle for him because he had a hard time getting himself up for games because he likes performing for the people, and he doesn't see the TV cameras as much as people. I mean, I'm just saying there's guys like Crawford who have been through it before. So there is something to be said for them coming in clutch in some of these situations.
Then we move to game three. They get to go for the sweep. And to be honest, Descalfani was great. He's been just balls out. I mean, I'll go over his stats here in a bit, but he gets the win and he didn't go the full complete game, but the Giants shut out the Rockies. So they didn't have to come back, but they did have a couple of timely hits. But let's go ahead, and I want to play this clip of the baby giraffe and his first home run of the year.
Stolen a base and scored a run, and he has struck out. That ball is gone! The first home run of the year for Brandon Belt.
Tell you what, he was quick to the inside part of the plate, pressing out. He skated inside this pitch. It's a breaking ball right there at the belt. Both elbows bent through the swing, and he finds the barrel head and just rides it right out of here. He starts doing that. Look out. He's starting to get hot.
Well, I hope he's starting to get hot, but...
I was going to say, he did not get hot.
Chris. No, he did not get hot after that. That was,
He's batting 160 on the season. He struck out 11 times in 29 plate appearances. That home run was his best swing so far. He's only walked four times in those 29 plate appearances. So Belt hasn't contributed much, but it was nice to see. That was a shot. That thing got out of here in a hurry. That was one of the harder hit balls the Giants have had this season. But nope, he's not getting hot just yet. It was just good to see him finally get one under his belt. No
problem. Yeah, under his belt. John Miller sounds like he had trouble calling those two home runs, Crawford. Was he like mid bite in a sandwich or something? And he's like, I can't say anything yet. No, I'm done.
He's trying to overdo the crowd noise.
Yeah. I don't know what that was all about. John's usually so good. You know, it's high, it's deep, whatever, you know, adios pelota. But it was just like, it's gone. I was like, oh, okay.
He's John, like, you can see it. You just watch.
So anyway, they ended up going ahead and shutting that door for nothing. I mean, geez, it's incredible. They move into they lost game two, right? Have it up here. No, sorry, I'm still thinking about Colorado, right?
Yeah.
So they won that.
Colorado. It was the end of the sweep.
That was the end of the sweep. So they end up sweeping, win their first three home games. And then Cincinnati comes in. Now, Cincinnati came in leading the league in home runs and runs and right way up there in batting average. So their pitching's been so-so. So it was kind of a good test. It was like the opposite. You know, you had the better pitching team, at least so far in the season, and the better hitting team in the Reds. And the first game didn't go so well. Giants get shut out 3-0. So you're like, uh-oh. You know, here we go. It was a couple of bombs by the Reds in that game. So the pitching wasn't horrible. It was only 3 runs. In fact, that was Aaron Sanchez. And to be honest, for coming back from the injuries he's come back from and to fill in as the fifth starter for the Giants right now, he's been great. I mean, what's been your review of Aaron Sanchez so far?
I've enjoyed watching him compete. It's kind of cool that he's got a nice story to come back. He has seemed in command pretty much when he's taken the mound, and he's doing what a fifth starter is supposed to do right now, which is keep your team in games.
Yeah.
So you can win them. And even though they didn't win that game, he kept his team in the game, so they had the opportunity. I mean, they only lost, what was it, 3-0 on Monday night?
Yep.
3-0. The Giants just got dominated. You know, their lack of hits just caught up to them in one game. And, you know, Sanchez just gets the bad luck for that. As you said, every starter has gone 5 innings, and Gausman is the only one to, in the next night, Gausman's the only one to have given up 4 runs out of any of them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can't ask for much more from Aaron Sanchez. Do we think that's going to happen all this season? Who knows? The Giants are starting to be that team where pitching wants to go as a reclamation project, and they're going to keep propping these guys up. They're going to keep throwing Sanchez, Disco. Now we got Tyler Wood. Is it Tyler Wood? What's Alex?
Alex Wood.
Thank you. Alex Wood coming in. I was looking at a list of players. We got Alex Wood coming in. So we have all these free agent guys that are trying to resurrect their careers with the Giants. And if Sanchez is going to give you 5-6 innings competitive every night out, that's all you can ask for. So it was, you know, it's good to see that he'll keep them in games.
By the way, I'm reading the comments. I'm beginning to question Mike Dowling's fantasy team. It's full of Giants, which I wouldn't normally advise, but he said Crawford, DeSclafani, Gausman, Tyler Rogers, they're all on his fantasy team.
You gotta get McKee. Wow. He's the one scooping up all the saves. Rogers.
Even I'm in a 16-team league, and let me tell you, it gets really thin when you have 26 players on 16 teams. And even then, we still have not put a Tyler Rogers or a DeSclafani on anyone's team. It's funny how everyone just avoids the Giants. So yeah. I do have Gausman and Cueto on my teams, but still, good luck with that. All right, then we move into game two, and the Giants look like, you just mentioned it, Gausman gave up 4 runs in the first, and they're suddenly down 4-0 after losing 3-0 the night before. Their bats just have not been rolling. A couple of timely hits, no doubt, but they have not been scoring 5, 6, 7 runs a game. And this is the game, I saw the Facebook post on Giants Chatter, I think, from you, Eric. You're like, Giants scoring 8, book it. You were close. You called it. You're very, very close. Hey, within a run, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, honestly, it was a gut punch. It was just like, oh, crap, they're on their way to losing the first two of this series. But, oh, no, pray tell, the big hits started rolling in. Here we are in the bottom of the first with a runner on, nobody out, and Mike Yastrzemski up at the plate.
High drive, right field, it is out of here. And it's 4-2.
Guy dancing.
Hi. Should be a good game.
Yeah,
well.
Yeah, right, Kipe. All right. Should be a good game.
He called that one. Exactly.
The kind of game we thought we were going to see.
Yep. They didn't think they were going to see it. I did.
1-0, 2-0. What do you think, Mike?
Exactly. Well, I thought this was going to be a pitcher's duel. You have Castillo and Gausman, right?
Yep.
Out over the plate at the belt. And Yastrzemski says, that's where I like him. Unloads for his second homer of the year.
Yeah,
the Giants are better against pitchers that are more accurate, and Castillo is more accurate. And I just find that the way his ball moves, it goes into the swing path nicely as some of the Giants swings, like a Longoria, like a Yastrzemski, like a Crawford. So that's kind of why I was like, hey, maybe they'll score 8 tonight.
Yeah, yeah, no, they So I don't have the other highlights with me. Of course, Crawford followed in the bottom of the first with a game-tying two-run bomb. Another big hit from Crawford. Again, still hit another 200, but he's got notable hits so far. It was 4-4. And it really was back and forth until later. I think Longo had a home run. It was 6-6. And then it was Flores delivering the very exciting sacrifice fly in the seventh inning or so. But again, the bullpen shut it down. It was a one-run game, and it was then Rogers and McGee to close it out. And what can you say, man? Those two have been just so solid so far. Again, I think McGee's going to continue success. Tyler is going to have his bumps. I think that's been shown last year and the year before. You know, he'll throw a couple frisbee sliders that get a little too much of the plate, hang a little too much, and, you know, they'll get jacked. But right now, I mean, he's doing better than I thought he would have. And how can you blame Kapler if the results are coming? You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you do worry about overuse a little bit.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, but it could be broke if you use it too much. You're right.
You know, with all the off days here early in the season, it's been kind of easier to work the bullpen. You know, we're here in another off day. But the Giants are about to enter a stretch where, what is this, 6? And then 4, 10? 13 straight days without a day off. Their next day off is 2 weeks from today.
Yeah.
So we're going to really have to see going forward how he manages that bullpen, because McGee and Rogers have appeared in two-thirds of the games, 8 out of 12 games so far. That's, yeah, two-thirds. So I can't expect that the Giants think they're going to use them every 2 out of 3 games in the series. But
Tyler Rogers appearing in 103 games this year. Could you imagine?
He can. The guy throws 83 miles an hour. So
isn't the record like 89, I think, appearances for a full season?
It's got to be somewhere around there. Somewhere close to 90 would make sense, just over a half a team's games. I mean,
I think it is.
Rogers, I mean, they're delivering. McGee, his whip is less than half. He struck out 10 guys already in 7 1/3 innings, and he's only allowed the one hit to Jay Bruce yesterday. I mean, it's just
that was ridiculous. That was funny yesterday, like, because, you know, he came in and I knew that he had, you know, been hitless so far. And when Jay Bruce got the hit, I was actually like, no, there he goes. I was like, yeah, the dude's gonna give up a couple hits throughout the year. That's going to happen. All he throws is fastballs, by the way. They know what's coming. That's what I think is so remarkable about Jake McGee so far, is that literally 95%, I mean, it's been shown, 95%. So basically, you're going up there looking for fastball. That's it. It's just a fastball. And it's astounding to me that he succeeds at it. And it's not like a Mariano Rivera cut fastball where it's like, boom, it's tailing. I mean, it's got some action. Don't get me wrong. But I'm not sure what magic he's pulling to just say, batter, here comes a 96-mile-an-hour fastball. Okay, here it comes. Swing and miss. I don't get it. It's incredible.
He just can't time it up for some reason. There's got to be some deception in his delivery somewhere that makes it seem like the ball gets on you faster than it really does. It's got to be something like that. I mean, we know there's pitchers that all of us had problems with over the years because, like, the ball felt like it disappeared on us, and that's got to be what it's like for the hitters, because it's not even like he's constantly going. I mean, he does go to the high fastball a lot, but it's not just the high fastball. He works the bottom of the zone. He works the sides. So it's been impressive to watch. He's a one pitch wonder, and you don't know how long it can last, but you want to ride it as long as you can at this point.
Yeah. Sean Estes was on with Murph and Mac this morning, and they were talking to him about that. They were asking a question, of course, he being a former Giants pitcher, how can a guy go out there and throw one inning of nothing but fastballs and then strike out 2 out of 3. How does he do that to major league players when they know a fastball is coming? And what you just referenced, the giddy up, he said that's what he's seen by the reaction of the batters. Yeah. Not that he stepped in the box, of course, against McGee, but as a pitcher, he notes the batter's reactions. And he's like, I know he's not throwing 100. He's close. He's, you know, 95 to 97 at some points. But he said the way that they're late on certain pitches and the way they're undercutting the ball, because he gives up a lot of fly balls and they swing under the ball a lot. He said that's an indication to him that their timing is just slightly off. They think it's getting there a little bit later than it does. So it's got that extra giddy up. Not in the physics of it, because it's still a 96-mile-an-hour fastball. It still gets there in the same amount of time. but their mental, you know, perception of it is just slightly off for whatever reason. He couldn't explain that. He said some of it's delivery, some of it's tempo, some of it's just arm mechanics and what they see coming out of the slot. But he says it definitely appears as though it's just a little faster than the batters are expecting. And
that's what makes it so weird, because everybody throws 96 now.
Yeah. That's why
he's doing something unique with the speed in general of what it is. It's just, there has to be something that takes the timing off of it and, you know, ride it. Like I said, I mean, as long as it's working, Jake McGee is the, there was a debate if there was, you know, a closer going into the season. And I think Jake McGee has put an end to that debate.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, we had tabbed him definitely as the closer. I mean, he did well with the Dodgers last year in his, you know, partial season with them. And he did well in the World Series and all that stuff. So, you know, he's definitely good. But before that, you know, he pitched with Colorado and was just trashed there. And prior to that, he was with Tampa Bay. So, I mean, Farhan definitely saw something in him. You know, other teams could have picked him up and they didn't. So the Giants plucked him up and it's been great so far. It's been fantastic. All right. So the last game we're going to review, of course, is the final game that happened yesterday in San Francisco. And this was the concerning development. The Giants are up 2-0 here in the top of the sixth, full count, one out. So Cueto's 5 2/3 after this pitch. But just watch how he delivers this pitch and immediately signals to the bench that he's done.
He'll zip you at 94. Got him. 93-mile-an-hour fastball. Now that's taking advantage of the scoreboard. You have a two-run lead. You don't want to walk anybody this part of the lineup.
Now what do we think?
Well, if he slipped.
Hear that fan? He's throwing gas right now. Let's go.
Watch Cueto after he releases a pitch. He looks into the Giants dugout. Says, I'm done.
Yeah, he's like giving the motion to Neck, like, you know, cut it off.
I'm done.
And that was one of his best pitches of the day. He reached back completely for that, which possibly could be what hurt him.
Yeah, he's just been great. Now the concern is his lat. That's been the diagnosis, not the diagnosis. We know it's his lat that stiffened up on him. Kapler suggested that it started to flare up the pitch before the final pitch. And then the final pitch, it really pulled. And then that's when he was like, I'm done. Casale, in his post-game interview, actually indicated he thought that it flared up perhaps earlier in the game. And it just slowly built up, and he was just pitching through it until finally that last pitch just was, you know, it went all the way. And he's like, okay, I'm done. Either way, I'm glad it's not an elbow or a shoulder, because the way he came off the mound, you know, when things pop and snap, that's when you worry. And that's also when you know you're done, right? And we've seen that with pitchers before when their elbow or shoulders popped with a UCL or something like that, or a rotator cuff. It's like, oh, God. Here we go. Him loses lat. So the good news is that it's a muscle, not a tendon or ligament. The bad news is lats and hamstrings and those big muscle groups, especially when it's so involved in that delivery, can take minimum 3 weeks to heal, sometimes 6 to 8. And I'm just really hoping it's a super mild strain and that he'll only miss maybe a start or two. But as of right before we started recording, there's still no diagnosis right now.
Well, so then he'll definitely miss a few starts. It's, you know, you could tell, you're right, though. You could tell right away it wasn't an arm thing, because a pitcher's going to react if it's an arm or an elbow thing. Mm-hmm. And he didn't react in a way that he was hurting there. He just reacted like, I know I'm hurting somewhere. I think if it was his arm, he would have reacted by moving it. You know, pitchers are a weird bunch. So he would have tried to make sure it worked. So that's a shame to hear, though, that it could be up to 6 to 8 weeks if it's something that strenuous. And who knows? Johnny is getting older, so it could take him a little longer to heal. Yeah. So, you know, Logan Webb was just taken out of the rotation for Alex Wood to come in. And guess what, Logan? You know, he threw in a scoreless inning yesterday, and that was pretty much to keep him on same path through the rotation the next time. So he'll be taking Cueto's place. So, you know, at least the Giants have depth. You know, we talked about this heading into the season. They got depth. So nobody can replace what Johnny brings to the table, but hopefully they can keep competitive.
Yeah. So, yeah, Alex Wood has now been cleared, so he'll be joining the team on the road, and he'll actually be facing the Marlins on Sunday, it's been announced. The question is, and yesterday Kapler hasn't confirmed whether Webb will be back in the rotation, but that's what he inferred. He said, well, the good thing is that we didn't want Webb to pick up in the middle of the inning. That's why he didn't pick up for Cueto after he came out, but he threw the next inning. He said he wanted a clean inning, but he only threw one because they knew that they might need him back in the starting rotation. So they didn't rely on him for more than one inning, despite, you know, putting McGee and others back out there. So, yeah, I think that's our expectation, is that that's what's going to happen with Webb. He'll just slide back into the rotation. Alex Wood's going to be on the roster. And combined with that, Maranta, of course, several days ago was placed on the 10-day IL. They called up Lamont Wade Jr. in his place on the roster to go 14 position players and 12 pitchers. But after a few games now, Lamont Wade is injured. He's been put on the injured list, and Steven Duggar was called up before yesterday's game. So he was in uniform for yesterday. But he apparently will remain. The Giants are going to continue with 14 position players and 12 pitchers for now. But you just pointed out they have like 13 or 14 straight days without an off day. I can't imagine that staying.
Nope.
They're going to need to go back to 13 pitchers. So I think Duggar's time up here is very, very limited, shall we say.
Well, if Wood hasn't been activated yet, Duggar might be there until Wood gets activated on Sunday.
Yeah, that was just the indication so far is that they were still going to swap Cueto for Wood, you know what I mean, on the roster because of the IL. And so they're still going to continue with 14-12. But again, I don't think that 14-12 is going to last long. I think maybe one time through the rotation, depending how the staff does, especially with overworking Tyler Rogers and Jake McGee so far. You know, those guys can't go out there every single day. It's just not possible.
Now, they need more right-handed help in the bullpen. If Whistler had stepped up and not had such a rough beginning, he would be somebody they could count on, because pretty much everybody else in the bullpen is a left-handed pitcher. I mean, McGee, Peralta, Garcia, Alvarez, Berger, they're all left-handed pitchers. So Whistler needs to step it up from his perspective as one of the righties out of the bullpen so that they can keep up the workload that needs to be kept up. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers right now, and Whistler's only thrown 2 1/3 inning. And if you're only one of three right-handers, two right-handers coming out of a bullpen, because now Maranta's down, but if you're one of only, you know, two or three right-handers coming out of bullpen, you should have more than 2 1/3 innings pitched. But
well, I think that's been a result of the bullpen being so, I'm not going to say taxed, that's the wrong word, because the starters have all been going 5+ innings. It's been more of the close situations. I think Kapler has just shied away from Whistler, you know, in terms of his performance so far, and he's relying on the regulars. Again, we're worried about overuse. Peralta's been out there a decent amount lately too. And Webb did replace Maranta to be one of only two right-handers. So you take him back out and put him in the starting rotation, you're back down to that one righty in the pen, which that's kind of, you know, it's just Rogers. That's it. And the rest of them are all lefties.
That's what I'm saying. With Whistler not getting it together, he's not carrying the weight to balance out that bullpen, which is, again, amazing. You're right, though. The situationally, that's something Kapler's done pretty well, is he has situationally managed the bullpen pretty decently. But, you know, in a short sample size, we'd still don't know what long-term ramifications or, you know, impacts are on how some of these guys are being used early on.
Yeah. And the one thing I'm concerned about is that, you know, I think it's damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? Kapler's always been known for a guy that doesn't manage a bullpen very well. And of course, game one, we're all like, oh, there it is. See, we told you. But obviously the bullpen has been solid after that day. And to be honest, I think Kapler's pushed all the right buttons, and it's proof in their record. They're 8-3 since that first game, right? There hasn't, and they, none of those three games did they lose because Kapler pushed the wrong bullpen button. So
that's the key. That's what I'm saying.
Exactly. So it's kind of like a good umpire, right? If you don't notice the umpire, he's doing a good job. Yeah. If you don't have anything bad to say about Kapler, like, oh, he made this wrong move and this wrong move, then he's doing a good job. The bullpen buttons that he's pushing, Rogers, you know, Peralta, obviously McGee, that's an obvious one in the ninth. They're all the right buttons at the right times. They're getting out of situations. They're holding one-run leads, and they're winning games. So everything's been good so far. Yes, is there a chance that Rodgers and McGee might have been overused. Well, we don't know that. I mean, yeah, statistically, it's a lot. But, you know, if one of them goes down from an injury in a week or two, the last thing I want to hear is go, see, I told you Kapler was overusing them. If he didn't overuse them, they wouldn't be hurt. And I know that's going to happen, Eric, because it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. He pushes the right buttons to get all these W's. But then if maybe he overused them, maybe he doesn't. If it manifests itself in a potential injury, which you cannot always connect, by the way, to overuse, right?
Right.
Any injury could happen at any time. Then I don't want to hear that. I don't. It's like, look, they won freaking 8 out of 11 games. I mean, you know.
That's why I have to give Kapler credit. For as much as I've crapped on him before on certain managing styles, I got to give him credit for leading this team in the right direction to be 8-4 at this point. You know, he has pushed all the right buttons, which is all you can ask for out of a guy. And that's why I say it's a small sample size, so we'll see how it shakes out. But, you know, Rodgers and Kapler have two been high on my list of Giants I'm not really fans of, and they're both coming through so far this year. So I got to give credit where credit's due. Kapler really, he's mixing and matching so far. I mean, even when it comes down to the batting order, it's been all platoons. Brandon Belt is no longer a starting first baseman. He's part of a platoon. He is just somehow phased out of being the starting first baseman. And nobody seemed to notice, and nobody seems to care. It's pretty impressive when you look at it to see a manager be able to slide that in there and do that. Because Belt was an everyday player, and Belt is a beloved Giant at this stage. So when you got him, you know, recognized in accepting a platoon, you know you've got this team on board for some things, because Belt's one of those leaders in the clubhouse. And if the leaders are on board, and it seems like they are, it's going to help everybody else. And, you know, that's the one thing I've always given credit to Kapler for, is he is a good leader of men. So it's good to see the balance going up so far in the season. I mean, this 8-4, what are they, 4 games over 500? I can't imagine the last time they were that far over 500 had to have been like 2016.
Yeah, Kapler, it's been a long while.
Right. Yeah, so, you know, to put it all together like that, it's pretty impressive. This might be the best team we've seen since 2016. That's what we've kind of been talking about. So to have them that far ahead of 500 at this stage in the season, heading into their first real road trip to the East in 2 years, you know, it's a good place for them to be. So I'm impressed with what Kapler's done so far. And, you know, they put a good structure in place.
No, I've been, how can you not be satisfied with the performance so far? You know, it's been great. And, you know, they're going to hit their skids and slides, but it's been great so far. It's weird when you think about that they haven't even been to the East Coast in 2 years. That's so bizarre. You forget that last year's 60-game season was only intra-division, right? And then, of course, with the AL West, that's it. Everything was West Coast-based. I think Texas was the furthest they went, right? Astros/Rangers.
Even seeing Cincinnati was cool, because it was like, you know, we haven't seen this team in a while. I look forward to these games against the Marlins and Phillies just for the sheer, like, finally, like, it's a normal 162-game season.
Yeah.
Things aren't weird anymore.
Yeah, the Marlins have been playing well, too. I think they're a pretty good young team. They've been doing, you know, kind of outperforming, I think, their expectations, kind of like the Giants are. So I think it's going to be a fun series. All right, so we'll see what develops with the Cueto injury. It is of concern, but if he only misses one or two starts, I think that'll be fantastic. If it's more than that, you know, they'll just have to deal with it and roll with it. The Giants did do a trade earlier this week. They traded cash for New York Yankees second baseman Tyro Estrada. He's a 25-year-old, again for cash. Overall, he has 112 major league at-bats. He's hitting .214, 4 bombs, 15 RBIs. He was drafted as an international free agent, or signed as an international free agent, in 2012. Wow. So think about that. That's 9 years ago. So was he 16 when they signed him as an international? Because he's 25 right now. I mean, that's crazy. So he might have been 12 or 13. I'm sorry, 16 or 17 when he was signed. But he's one of these young guys. I think he was Dominican Republic, if I'm not mistaken. And apparently he's an excellent athlete, had a lot of potential in the Yankee system. I was going through a lot of Yankee blogs, kind of like similar to Torture Cast. It was kind of interesting to see the Yankees fan perspective, because I'd never heard of this guy. But apparently he's one of those, like, oh, this is a diamond in the rough. He's coming for year after year after year. And he finally got his cup of coffee in the majors, but he's basically just not shown anything statistically so far, despite being apparently this physical specimen of athleticism. So a lot, most Yankee fans are like, yep, that's fine. See ya. You had many years, just never happened. So, hey, it's for cash, whatever. Giants got cash.
It's another flyer. I mean, it's
another flyer. This is definitely right up Farhan's, alley.
And it sounds like a guy, I don't know anything about him. You've definitely done more work on him than I have. He sounds like a guy who could be versatile if he's that much of an athlete. Then he sounds like he's in Farhan's mold of looking for the next Kike Hernandez.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you never know, right? You know, maybe with the right coaching and pushing and prodding and they've noticed something about him, maybe he'll be up. He's one of these guys, though. He does have a little bit of major league experience. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him later this year, in a Giants uniform. So,
yeah, if there's injuries, if somebody, Solano goes down for a little bit, LaStella, somebody like that, we can totally see him coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's check in on some statistical leaders for the ball club. Longo leads the team with 4 bombs. Crawford right behind him with 3, and then a whole slew of 4 or 5 Giants at 2. Of course, Posey had those 2 in the beginning, and he's done. I mean, he's hitting fine. His average is fine, but he hasn't hit for any power since then. RBI, Longo, of course, leads with Crawford at 8, and then batting average, and these are qualified, by the way, so this isn't a guy who's, 3 for 4 for the year. We have Solano at 353 and Longo at 316. But everyone else is like, woo!
I got him in front of me. I got Belt at 160, Crawford at 158, Dickerson 148, Dubon 143, Yastrzemski 154, Flores 125, Austin Slater. Hey, good job, Austin Slater. You're over 200, 212. Darren Ruff, 188. And, these guys are not having bad at-bats, but they're not putting the ball in play enough.
No.
That's just crazy. Wow. What is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. If you include Casale, 8 guys hitting under 200 out of the Giants' 12, 13 regulars.
Yeah, I just, it's 12 games. It's fine. It's short. A lot of these guys have 25, 35 at bats. It's a very small sample size, but
Did I lose Chad or did you all lose me?
No. Hello. I'm back.
Okay.
Sorry about that. I don't know. It just bumped me out of the studio. I didn't even press a button. Ah, I'm back. I was saying that, to get to their means, their expected means, they got to hit pretty well over the next, month or so to get back their averages back up to like a 250, something semi-respectable. But I mean, I guess that's the exciting part of it. We don't expect, 8 guys to hit under 200 for the year, so it's gonna correct at some point.
I mean, I think that's why we're so positive right now. I mean, the Giants are 8-4, and they really haven't done much. All they've done is just gotten the ball, the hits at the right times. They really haven't come through as a team. There's gonna be more of these slugfests like they had with the Reds the other night. There's going to be more of these 7-6 games. Willie talked about it, in our season preview show, and then opening day was one of
It was opening day, yeah.
Right.
We're going to have a lot of 8-7 games. That was the first score of the first game. It was unbelievable. Yep.
and we're going to have those. We really are. That's why the bullpen stuff's going to change, because we're going to have some 10-3 games. We haven't had those yet. And so it's nice that it doesn't matter that the Giants aren't hitting the ball just yet.
Yeah,
it really is nice that it doesn't matter. I mean, if we were down the stretch here like last year when they'd win one game to get in the playoffs and they didn't, we'd be pulling our hair out. But they're still winning ball games and getting the job done. So I agree with everybody who says it in the comments, and we've been saying it. Just wait till they start hitting. Imagine how good this offense actually could be, because nobody looks particularly bad. They're just, things are not falling is what it feels like.
Yeah, no, it's true. One of the things that I think it's weird. I don't have these vibes yet because it's way too early to call it. And again, even the worst team is going to win 8 out of 12 during a 162-game season. When it's at the beginning of a season, it seems to be magnified, right? 8-4! Oh my God! They're winning at a 667 clip. They're amazing! Well, it's like, yeah, wait till they lose 6 in a row. That's going to happen this year, okay? It's going to happen. But if things continue in a positive note, they're playing a lot of tight ball games, a lot of close ball games, a lot of late hits and clutch bullpen is happening, which has all been great. But what, as we develop into the season, what if this continues and continues and continues? There might be some vibes from the 2010 team, you know? A little bit of why we named, well, Willie named this podcast Torture Cast, you know? All for, you know, Dwayne Kuiper coining that phrase during the 2010 season. Giants baseball, it's torture. Because every game was this, was tight, late, one run, bullpen, you know, Brian Wilson loading the bases with one out kind of games. And it just raised your blood pressure and it was just pure torture. And, you know, they end up winning it in the final game of the season against the Padres in 2010. And of course, go on that run through the postseason. You know, this team is not going to steamroll teams like the Dodgers can. They're just not. So if they are going to be successful this year, and I mean like above 500, although I didn't think anything close to 500 is a successful season for this team, but if they are overachievers and actually have a winning record this year, that's the way they're going to win it. That's the way they're going to win these games. They're not, like you just said, they're not going to win a lot of these 7-1 laughers. There's going to be a lot of these 8-7, 4-3, 3-2 games. And that's what we're going to have to live with as fans. And that's fine. It's exciting baseball, but it definitely gets the, you know, checks your coronary for how good the structure of the wall is. That's for sure.
I'll say I noticed this too, and this is more the pitching than the hitting, but the Giants haven't lost two straight yet.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah, they've been able to bounce back.
They have not had a losing streak this year.
Right. And they've won, what, 6 of the last 7 or 7 of the last 8 at this point?
Yeah, I think 7 of 8. It's been great. Yeah, speaking of pitching, obviously we looked at their starters, or I should say the whole staff is at a 2.78, second best in the National League. But, you know, Desclafani right now, 0.82, one earned run in 11 innings. Cueto, 1.8 after his exit yesterday, 20 innings pitched. Jake McGee, you know, is obviously 6-for-6 in save opportunity, 7 innings pitched. The first hit of the year to Jay Bruce yesterday in 10 Ks. You know, I could go down the list, but those are kind of your highlights right now. It's been great. And Disco Tony, you know, he's going to be pitching down in Miami again, so we'll see how he does. But this is a guy I didn't know much about. I know he's had some success in the majors, but a little bit of a journeyman. So I this is great. Grin, just we're talking, you know, two starts here. It's nothing major, but like what we see so far. Have you picked up on anything that you like about him, like his location placement, anything else?
Nothing specific, because I was in and out on his last start. So I just like that Disco seems to come and compete. And he and Casale seem to be on the same page with the ex-Reds connection. I like you. I didn't know much about him, except that he seemed like a serviceable major leaguer. And so far he's proven to be a little better than a serviceable major leaguer.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that he's only given up, you know, one run in 11 innings. So it is a good sign, but we'll see what happens. He's pitching tonight tomorrow in Miami. And in fact, the whole series with Disco and then Sanchez and then Wood, it really makes it interesting. The Giants offense is going to have to come alive, because those are technically the 3, 4, and 5 starters that are going out there for them.
Yep.
So the bats will have to pick it up with that. So, but I like watching Disco compete. He's been a lot of fun. And I will just continually call him Disco, because I'm going to screw up Disclafani all the time. It's not even that hard. I mean, I can say Yastrzemski like it's nothing, but Disclafani,
right?
It slows me down every time.
Oh, my God. I think that's too funny. I know. Disclafani, Disclafini, Disclafoni. And I keep wanting to say all those variations of it. It's, I don't know
Disco.
Why.
The Disco Stew, the gifts are just getting a workout.
Disco, Disco Tony, hey, you know. By the way, it kind of fit the mold of a Disco Tony in his bullpen, you know, warm up there before his last start. He requested Frank Sinatra to be played. So he's a big Sinatra fan. So I think that's pretty cool. So there you go.
Ties he wants right to make there. Sinatra Sundays a thing.
Yeah, yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. So, you know, you have the resident DJ, you know, DJ BJ or DJ Crawford, DJ Craw, whatever you want to call him. But obviously pitchers have the right down in the bullpen, especially when they're starting. So we'll see if we see more Frank Sinatra being played at Oracle Park, not just Tony Bennett after wins. You know, that'd be great. Speaking of which, I'm hoping to attend my first game as press next week. So we'll see if that happens with my schedule. I'm excited about that, because I really am anxious to get back to the ballpark. Which
is that when the Rockies are already back in town again? Oh yeah, the Marlins and the Rockies. Look at that.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'd go see a Marlins game potentially that next Thursday. So we'll see if that happens. All right, let's talk about stuff around the league. As we mentioned earlier, Boston has won 9 in a row after losing their first 3 games. I haven't checked in today. I know they were losing 2-0 to Minnesota. They did have a chance to win 10. Not one, but 2 no-hitters this week. That's crazy. Yeah. We had Joe Musgrove of San Diego on April 9th, just, what, 5-6 days ago. And then Carlos Rodon of the White Sox last night. And Eric and I and Willie were kind of texting back and forth. And it's always fun to tune into those games the last, you know, inning or two, because I can't imagine the nerves that are flowing through your body in an instance like that. You know, these are pro athletes. Most of them are going to harness that energy and use it for good to improve their performance. Because you saw him last night. He hit, what, 99 on one of his last pitches. And it was his hardest pitch of the night. So you knew that he was into it. But, man... You know, first of all, he almost lost it on that great play by Abreu, where, you know, it was that ground ball to the left of first base. And the only play was Abreu had to snag it and run back to the bag and slid his foot out there. And it was such a bang-bang play. And, of course, right when it happened, I was like, well, by default, the umpire has to call him out. Because even if he thinks he's safe, call him out. Because
let replay turn it
let replay fast. Yeah, because you don't want to have happen what what's the umpire's name who famously gave up the perfect game with a horrible call for the Tigers, right? And to this day, you know, he knows he made a mistake and they've made peace with it and the whole thing, but that's the kind of situation you don't want to be in. Granted, with replay now you have that as insurance, but I was like, call him out, and he did. And of course, replay didn't have enough evidence to overturn it, and it looked like he was out. So,
well, because the dude, like his right, when he dove for the bag, it looked like his right arm passed the bag.
It did. I know if his right arm had hit the bag, if he was just a little over, he probably would have been safe after replay. So, regardless, that was a race, or it wasn't a race. It was already an out. But then the next batter, he throws a slider just a little too far and in, and it hits the back foot of the batter. And the batter, you know, it definitely wasn't as bad as, oh my God, I can't remember the batter earlier this week. Who was it? Who he stuck his arm out in? It was a strike, and he got hit by a breaking ball. He just put out his armor, you know, his armored elbow. I can't remember who it was. And he got the hit by pitch, and anyway, ended up helping win the game. But you know, he didn't move his back foot. But it's one of those situations where you can't fault him. It's a breaking ball. Things slide a little too far, hit his back foot, but. You know, looking at the replay, I think he knew there was a chance he could get hit, and he just kind of froze and let it come to him. And, you know, because you see a lot of batters will dance out of the way. He didn't dance, so. It is what it is, you know. As an umpire, you couldn't call that not getting out of the way. No. So, you know, he was hit, and he lost the no-hitter, or the perfect game, but the no-hitter was intact. He got the next two guys, so it was fantastic. It was a great job by Rodon.
The San Diego one was the first one for them in their franchise history.
And right.
It was done by a local kid. Apparently, Joe Musgrove grew up a Padres fan in the San Diego area. And here he was in his second start ever with the Padres. And he throws a no-hitter at Texas in front of, you know, probably like 25,000 or something.
Because of Texas, right?
I thought that one.
And no COVID here.
Yeah, apparently not. If you ignore it, it goes away. It was fun to watch the Musgrove one. I didn't want to root for it at first because it's a Padre, and I kind of liked the idea that the Padres had never thrown a no-hitter. It was kind of fun having the little brother be the little brother. And then I was like, well, it's a great story. He's a San Diego kid. You know, might as well root for it. And it was a lot of fun to see that happen. And it's just crazy. That's the fastest. He is the fastest newly acquired pitcher to ever throw a no-hitter. No pitcher has ever thrown a no-hitter within the first two games with his new team.
Oh.
It's actually him and Wilson Alvarez. But Wilson Alvarez appeared in one game and then didn't play for two more years, and then got called up and threw a no-hitter in his first ever start. So it's not kind of the same thing where, you know, some guy signed in the offseason and then immediately went out and threw a no-hitter.
So that was kind of cool to find out that he's the first guy to ever do that within the first few games. And I enjoyed the San Diego one. I love that these no hitters, you know, I'm trying to explain to people in my household, these things are rare. And then here I am 5 days later, I'm going, oh, here's another one of these things.
I did the same thing with my daughter because I was showing her and she was watching with me. And when they were jumping all over Musgrove, she's like, oh, that's so nice of them. That's pretty cool. You know, like,
yeah.
She plays softball, but she didn't really understand the importance of a no-hitter. And then last night, I'm like, oh, my God, look at this. We got another one. But this is a perfect game. She's like, another one? I was like, well, it is still a no-hitter, but it's even better. It's called a perfect game. That means you don't allow a single runner on base. So, like, I was trying to explain to her, you know, it could be like you're hit by a pitch or a fielder just drops a ball and it's not even the pitcher's fault. Or the catcher could drop a third strike and the batter could make it to first. And like, I'm all these ways. And then right after that, the guy gets hit by the pitch. And I was like, see, it happens, but he still got the no hitter. I know.
Anything can happen. That's so, you know, you mentioned the perfect game. Did you hear about the softball pitcher?
The high school pitcher, I guess it was, or was it college? It was college. Oh my God. Yeah. Seven innings. Yeah. 21 strikeouts. Perfect game. That's, yeah, you can't get better, right?
I mean, North Texas Hope Troutwine. She pitched seven innings, 21 Ks. That's just ridiculous.
I mean,
I want to get her name right because I knew I'd seen it.
Yeah. I got to say, maybe that whole league isn't very good. Because you know, how can you strike out all 21 batters? I mean, that's like when you hear about, some high school or some like D3 somewhere, right? Where you're like, okay, maybe they're, you know, she's the star in the entire league and everyone else is pretty mediocre. Yeah. It's gotta be one of those situations. You know, you don't have like a bunch of all-stars on the other team. No. I don't think so. You get your mop-up teams, but regardless, you still gotta be that accurate and you know. Jeez, that's crazy.
For us, we had two no-hitters. This is the closest two no-hitters have been thrown to each other since 2012 when it was like Felix Hernandez and I think Philip Humber or something like that. Or no, it was 2001 with Francisco Liriano and somebody else. They threw them within a few days of each other in May, 2011. But it's just weird to get two no-hitters in less than a week's time, you know, switching to the MLB Network, watching the last couple of innings, like you're saying, you know, it's... It's fun to be a baseball fan right now. Everything around the league seems exciting. Guys like Acuna Jr. are tearing it up. You see
Pablo today? Another pinch hit home run?
I mean, all three of his home runs are pinch hit home runs. The guy is a stud right now.
He's 3-for-8 on the year. All three hits are home runs. He has 7 RBIs in those 8 at-bats. And they're all pinch hit, yeah. So they're beginning to love him down there in Atlanta. So
I mean, hell yeah, that's like
I gave him the lead. It was a 3-run bomb. It was crazy.
That's Manny Trio pinch hitting type stuff. Wow.
Yeah, no, I love to see it. I love to see it. I mean, you know, his time was over on this team, but you know, I'm glad he's finding success elsewhere.
Oh yeah, I love Pablo.
All right, well, coming up, we referenced this, but the Giants are in Miami now. They start a 3-game series there tomorrow night. Then they'll be heading over to Philadelphia to wrap up the road trip before coming home and facing the Marlins and Rockies back at Oracle. We were recording at an odd time this week because of my schedule. We should be back on schedule on Monday, so we'll just have the Marlins series to review at that point. And then we'll move forward. We may have to adjust things as our schedules differ. But typically, we're going to be here most Mondays at around 12:15 Pacific time. We're always going to be live on Facebook. And then, of course, later you can find the audio podcast wherever you get your podcast. You can find this video on Facebook. You can also see it embedded at torturecast.com along with our audio podcast. You can follow us collectively on Twitter at TortureCast, like us on Facebook, follow us individually at ChadK21 for myself, and at 2OutHits for Eric, and of course at Willie Dills, who was absent today. Me and Willie, we do have a new podcast, which I've mentioned a couple of times, called Heart Edition. We usually record every Tuesday or so. It's not up on Apple Podcasts yet, so don't search there, but you can find it on Podbean. And a lot of Spotify and a lot of other places like that. So just Google around for Heart Edition podcast. It's a lot of fun. We talk news, politics, sports. It's kind of all over the place, but we usually ramble for a couple hours and have a lot of fun doing it. So, Eric, what you got going on these days? Anything else?
No, just watching some. I can't wait for this Giants-Marlins and Giants-Phillies because I'm such a morning and early time of day person. I don't know if I'm still on the Eastern time zone or what, but I wake up at like 5:30, 6 o'clock. So even a 7 o'clock night game is tiring for me. So I'm looking forward to these like 4 o'clock start times in Miami. I think it's 4 o'clock tomorrow, 3 o'clock, and then we get breakfast and baseball on Sunday morning. So I'm kind of looking forward to that right now. I don't have anything else to plug except that the Giants are doing damn. Oh, go to Giants Chatter on Facebook.
I was going to say, yeah.
Join the Giants Chatter Facebook group. I'd probably be skewered for forgetting that one. So
you're no longer an admin. Bye-bye.
Right, you know, I mean, go to Giants Chatter on Facebook. Join the group. It's a pretty good group. They do game threads. So if you like the whole game thread experience, and there's a lot of fun people on there. Most of the people commenting here today are there on the game threads. So it's fun to interact, and that's where I did call out the other day that the Giants would score 8. I was particularly feeling good that day, so it was nice to see that the Giants were also, you know, able to come back that good. So again, Giants Chatter, and then that's all I got.
That's awesome. Yeah, I know you guys are doing a good job with that group. I do like the game threads. Unfortunately, you know, my schedule's all over the place. It's hard for me to be watching the games live all the time. I often have to be in the car on the radio, or, you know, watching later as I record them, or watch them on MLB.tv. But I see the comments flying, and it's definitely entertaining. So you guys are doing a good job there. So, all right, well, that's going to do it for episode 220. We will be back in a short 3 or 4 days for episode 221. Until then, for Willie, for Eric, this is Chad signing off, and we'll see you Monday. A-boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.